More than 100 years ago, Rudolf Steiner wrote that in the future, we will eliminate the soul with medicine. Under the pretext of a healthy point of view, there will be a vaccine by which the human body will be treated so that the human being cannot develop the thought of the existence of soul and spirit. He would be extremely smart, but he would not develop a conscience. And that is the true goal of some materialistic circles. A viral video which claims to be a leaked 2005 presentation to the DOD by American geneticist Dean Hamer shows a man briefing a room of men about the VMAT2 gene, the God gene, and how it can be suppressed with the use of vaccines.
Excuse me, on the left over here, we have individuals who are religious fundamentalists, religious fanatics, and this is the expression, RT-PCR, real-time PCR expression of the VMAT2 gene. Our hypothesis is that these are fanatical people, that they have overexpression of the VMAT2 gene, and that by vaccinating them against this, we'll eliminate this behavior.
In 2002, former news anchor Ryan Harper claimed in the San Francisco Chronicle that he created this video as a short film, but has provided no clear evidence to substantiate this claim. And if it is a hoax, then it appears to be disinformation, false information deliberately spread to employ strategic deceptions to advance political, military, or commercial goals. Because in 2009, Dean Hamer lectured at Marlboro College about this same subject.
Well, it turns out at least one gene that's involved in spirituality has now been identified. It's one of many different players. The next slide showed it. It's something called the vesicular monogene transporter number 2.
And in 2004, Hamer published the book The God Gene, How Faith is Hardwired into Our Genes, wherein he argues that a variation in the VMAT2 gene dictates one's openness to spiritual experiences, and without it, we cannot feel God. Not only is this information accurate, but it appears to have been deployed. In a recent article by Dr. Ariana Love, it is shown that this technology has existed for years. The VMAT2 gene is a protein that carries several vital neurotransmitters to synapses in the brain. It basically controls the central nervous system. Deleting it, known as a knockout, would greatly reduce these neurotransmitters, creating an endless list of chronic health issues. VMAT2 deletion is accomplished using the SLC18A2 cDNA ORF clone, where cDNA is complementary DNA, which is used in human cloning and genetically modifying an organism. In 2013, Supreme Court judges ruled that cDNA added to target cells in the human genome makes a person patent eligible. And there are patents for using this to genetically edit the human VMAT2 gene and delete it. This can easily be done using simple CRISPR technology and is even sold online. In a 2020 study on mice, VMAT2 gene deletion caused schizophrenia. In a 2022 study, it caused Parkinson's disease. In the American Journal of Human Genetics, a study on deleting the VMAT2 induces an intellectual disability syndrome in humans. It causes autoimmune disorders, cerebral palsy, type 1 diabetes, and several other illnesses. Begging the question, as Dr. Love asks, how long have pharma and the government been reducing our humanity through VMAT2 knockouts? VMAT2 deletion also causes fearfulness, psychiatric disorders, cardiac arrhythmia, cancer, and accelerated aging. While it's unlikely that these sadistic mad scientists can cut us off from God, they are definitely doing their best to murder us. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
All right, folks, as always, you can find and share that video at band.video and InfoWars.com. The latest from Greg Reese. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live from Austin, Texas, here at the InfoWars studio. We got a lot to talk about today. Like I said in the first part, it's going to be a Trump-heavy episode today. We're going to check in on the trial. look at the way that CNN is just, they're just, God bless them, they're desperately attempting to spin this. It's not working. It just, it frankly, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing all of us. We'll get into it. We'll get into that. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. Here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 21st of May, 2024. Singapore airline passenger dead after Boeing jet hit severe turbulence. A Singapore airline flight has made an emergency landing in Bangkok Tuesday following severe turbulence that left one person dead and others injured. The Boeing 777-300ER plane was traveling from London to Singapore, 211 passengers and 18 crew on board. Singapore Airlines said in a statement that the plane encountered severe turbulence en route before diverting to Bangkok, Thailand, saying, quote, "We can confirm that there are injuries and one fatality on board the Boeing 777-300ER. Singapore Airlines offers its deepest condolences to the family of the deceased." I don't know whether this is because it's a Boeing or if this is just another piece of bad luck on Boeing's part, not to, you know, put it in such a callous way, but how many times have we seen Boeing planes fall apart or catch on fire or slip off the runway? But I don't know how you can, I don't know how a plane can deal with massive turbulence. Frankly, I'm shocked it doesn't happen more often. Very sad, though, and yet another ding to old Boeing. Here's how CNN is putting the wrap-up of the charade known as the Trump trial. Trump's trial reaches crescendo as tempers fray in the courtroom. Dun-dun-dun. Aren't you excited? Doesn't this sound so dramatic? As Donald Trump's first criminal trial races towards its climax, his attorneys are previewing how they will beseech a jury next week to spare their client the shame of being the first ex-president to be convicted of a crime. I feel like we need to have we need some movie trailer music behind this account, behind this article. On a wild day in court Monday, Judge Juan Merchan accused one disrespectful defense witness of trying to stare him down, while the ex-president's former fixer, Michael Cohen, sensationally admitted to stealing thousands of dollars from his old boss's firm. What will happen next? Tune in today to Trump Trial, America Destroyed. Incredible. You know, it's funny how, you know, one of the big criticisms of Trump's, he's a reality show president. He's making everything into a reality show. And then they send him to trial and want to make the whole thing sound like a reality show. Beneath the uproar, there's a clear sense that his trial, which is intertwined with the country's future given Trump's bid to reclaim the White House, is now in its fateful endgame. The presumptive nominee's lawyers made a long-shot bid for the dismissal of his first criminal trial before the jury has ever been asked to deliberate. The gambit is a familiar one for defense teams that rarely works, but it offers a glimpse into the narrative Trump's lawyers will place before the jury. Will America be destroyed? Will Trump get off? Will Stormy Daniels ever get her money? Next time on Trump Trial, America Destroyed. Incredible. There is actually some interesting stuff going on in the trial. It's just the total collapse and failure of the entire prosecution team. It's the star witness proving on admitting on the stand to committing a crime worse than the one he's testifying about Trump committing. It is very funny. I mean, it is actually an interesting thing. It would actually be fun to have this covered in a realistic way. But instead, we get CNN's interpretation. We'll get back to that very soon. Meanwhile, I thought this headline sort of brought together a bunch of geopolitical threads, intertwined them. Kremlin says it's curious that U.S. appears ready to sanction the ICC. Curious, says Russia. The Kremlin said on Tuesday it was very curious that the United States appeared ready to use sanctions against the International Criminal Court, whose prosecutor requested arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his defense chief, and three Hamas leaders over alleged war crimes. Karim Khan said in a statement that he believes these men bear criminal responsibility for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. U.S. President Joe Biden called the legal step outrageous, while Secretary of State Antony Blinken said it could jeopardize negotiations on a hostage deal and ceasefire. Yeah, I'm sure. They were just on the cusp of getting that hostage deal and ceasefire. Then the dang ICC had to stick their nose in. Dang it, it's their fault this genocide is happening. No, it was almost over. It was actually done. No, it was finished, and the peace was about to be. And then the ICC had to stick their noses in. That's whose fault this is. They can just stop. There were deals to return every hostage months ago. Israel rejected it. Just to remind you how ridiculous that claim is. Remember, nobody's above the law is an anti-Semitic phrase. Can we do that? Can we make nobody is above the law an anti-Semitic phrase by demanding that Israel's leadership be actually brought to justice? Can the plea for justice against war criminals in Israel be so pervasive that the ADL is forced to come out and say that claiming nobody's above the law is anti-Semitic? Because you're actually calling for the ICC to issue an arrest warrant. But I mean, it's happening on a national level, it's happening on the international level. Biden came out to say, actually, what's happening isn't genocide, because that's the way justice works. And it's not about what a court decides with actually unbiased non-participants in the crime, adjudicating it in a objective sort of way. It's Biden declares whether you're guilty or innocent, and then the court follows up on that. So Biden has declared that it's not genocide. He has decided, forget the evidence, forget the arguments, forget the non-biased international court. It's Biden. He says it's not genocide, just like he says that white protesters are terrorists. So that's justice and the rule of law for you in 2024. Meanwhile, nearly half of U.S. voters want illegal immigrants rounded up and kicked out, according to a new poll. Democrats may have effectively convinced their base that during the Trump administration that building a wall and securing a border is racist, but the Biden's regime's open border policies in which illegal aliens from around the world are given free housing, transportation, the opportunity to vote, and get out of jail cards to reside in the United States indefinitely is outraging voters on both sides of the aisle. Yeah, as it should have the entire time. You know, our position has remained perfectly consistent throughout all of this. Glad to see everybody else coming around. But are they coming around for the right reasons, or is it just because it's their money being taken out? It's their neighborhoods being filled up. They were fine with it when it was everybody else who was being destroyed, and they will be again. As long as it's not actually impacting their daily life, then they can virtue signal about, you know, being the beneficent, charitable people, and the consequences can just go somewhere else because they vote correctly. So they're good. I wonder. I really do wonder if people actually going to make that big leap of going, hey, you know what? Maybe borders are real. And if borders are real, maybe nations are important. And if nations are real, maybe globalism is wrong. And if globalism is wrong, maybe we shouldn't be surrendering our sovereignty to international bodies. And if that's the case, then maybe the drive to do just that has been an anti-American conspiracy the entire time. Are they going to follow that trail? Are they going to pursue and connect those dots? Or are they just going to complain until the problem doesn't impact them personally, and then they'll go back to believing what they believed before? I wonder. I really do. Finally, we have this: microplastics found in every human testicle in study. Scientists say discovery may be linked to decades-long decline in sperm count in men around the world. Could be. If only somebody had warned us. Microplastics have been found in human testicles. The researchers saying the discovery might be linked to the declining sperm counts in men. The scientists tested 23 human testes, as well as 47 from pet dogs. They found microplastic pollution in every sample. Because, of course, they did. Because this has been going on for a long time and hasn't just been allowed to happen, but in many ways has been a contributing factor to the desired outcome of the people who, at this point, openly tell us they hate men, hate testosterone, they want you weak and gullible, and your testicles filled with plastic. Yeah. No, it's like biblical, like truly the end times. This is it. This is happening. And Have kids while you can. Have kids while you can, folks. That's our Daily Dispatch. Brought to you, of course, by InfoWarsStore.com. Go to InfoWarsStore.com today, not just to support us, but because we have the finest supplements in the business. Still getting that 40% off Nitric Boost, as well as Ultimate Fish Oil and Brain Force Ultra. Go today to InfoWarsStore.com. Not even for, you know what, even if you hate us, even if you think we should go away, even if you want to see our demise, guess what? We still want you to be healthy. We still want our haters to be able to enjoy the natural power of these timeless supplements like fish oil. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com, enemies. Go today, fools, liberals, leftists. Maybe with the right supplementation, we can break you out of the prison you've built in your own brain. Now, we're going to talk a lot about Trump today. We have a very, very disturbing story. Trump has basically gone mask off. He's fully committed now to being the thing they always said he was. He has released a truly chilling, a horrifying, frankly, ad. Viewer discretion advised. The outrage about this from the left is it's understandable, to be honest with you. It's when you release something like this, when you release something so objectionable, so viscerally wrong, and you'll see when we show this ad. I'll show you the ad. There won't be any question. You won't be sitting there going, wait, what? That ad made everybody mad. What about that? That seemed very normal. Milk toast, even. Don't be fooled. You are a Nazi, and you heard the dog whistle, and you agreed with it, and we all know it. Okay, so let's go to clip number 5 here. Viewer discretion advised. I'm sorry to have to show you this. This is Trump's new ad, which is very rightfully causing outrage, terror, fear in the hearts of liberals across the nation. Let's watch. Now, clip number 5, please.
What happens after Donald Trump wins? What's for America? The economy booms. American energy is unleashed and an end to crushing taxes. The border is closed and the largest deportation in history is underway. No more wars as we focus on home. Law and order is restored. The American dream is back. And the best is yet to come. Make America great again.
My God. Did you see that? Did you see it? You might have missed it. I can't believe what we just saw. Can't believe Trump would dare to publish such a thing. Are you confused? Did you miss something? You missed something. Frankly, is the biggest deal in the world today. Let's watch it again. Maybe for the keen-eyed, you can identify it. I just want to give you a chance. I'm being completely sarcastic, but I'm also being totally serious in the sense that this ad actually has caused insane outrage on the left. Can you see why? It's a little game, so we'll play this little game with our audience one more time. We'll play it again. Can you see the part of this ad that has leftist simultaneously foaming at the mouth in anger and hiding under their beds, scared. They're afraid for their lives now. Let's watch again, shall we?
What happens after Donald Trump wins?
Landslide, Trump wins.
What's for America?
What's for America?
The economy booms. American energy is unleashed back. And an end to crushing taxes. The border is closed, okay. And the largest deportation in history is underway. No more wars as we focus
strength,
on
strength, no more forever
law
wars.
And order is restored.
In order,
the
no,
American
racist,
dream is back, and the best is yet to come.
Yet to come.
Make America great.
There it is. There it is.
Again.
You see it? Do you see it? It's right there. That's it. It's that frame. Do you see it? Do you see what it is? Let's go now to clip number 6 here, where a leftist on Twitter has highlighted for us what we are supposed to be scared about. Let's roll clip 6 here as B-roll, and we'll show you what you might have missed there. The signal, the dog whistle, there it is. Significantly increased the creation of a unified Reich. Confirmed, Donald Trump is Nazi. Donald Trump is Hitler reborn, creation of a unified Reich. Look at that. Hitler also promised a unified Reich. You can't get away with this. Can we charge him with another 34 felonies? I mean, this has to be against the law. He used the word Reich. He said he unified Reich. You got trolled, liberals. You got trolled, leftists. Trump didn't produce this. Some internet user produced this and thought it'd be funny to put a reference to unified Reich because he knows that that you're desperate. I mean, the fact is you have nothing. You have absolutely nothing. So far, you're relying on totally baseless, utterly ridiculous charges and trumped up, no pun intended, show trials to destroy Trump through lawfare before ever having to actually contend with him during the election. The only thing you have to offer the American people is killing babies, mutilating babies, teaching children to be gay. I mean, this is what you offer people. And also stealing white people's money for non-white people. That's a big aspect of it too, obviously. They have no policy to stand on. They have no achievements to point to. They have no legitimate criticism of Trump. So they are desperate to convince you that electing him is destroying democracy, that he is Hitler 2.0, and they are frantic to find evidence of this. And so some meme maker out there puts together an ad and drops a little crumb for you, gives you what you want to show how hysterically and just stupidly paranoid you people are. And this is the thing. Do y'all remember when there was some CPAC event and it was like, if you looked at the stage from a bird's eye view, part of it kind of looked like part of a swastika? And there was like headlines across every mainstream news where it was like, see, they made their stage like a confirmed Trump is a Nazi. They made their stage a swastika. And it's like beyond the farthest conspiracy theorist, like looking for symbols. I mean, when you take the meme of like, you know, where you just see some normal picture and then you zoom in on a triangle and overlay the all-seeing eye. It's like, do-do-do-do-do-do, Illuminati confirmed. I mean, that's how they are, but with Nazi stuff, right? Take a picture of a stage. But if we look at it at this angle, dun-dun-dun, Nazis are running the Trump campaign. Okay. So because this venue had a stage that had a crook in it, you think that this is how desperate they are. Now, if there was any evidence at all that anything Trump believed was in any way fascist or Nazi-ish, they wouldn't have to rely on these things. They wouldn't have to get trolled like this if it was as serious as they say. It obviously isn't. Trump posts video referencing unified Reich if reelected. Former President Donald Trump posted a video on Monday showing images of a fake newspaper article that references a unified Reich if he's elected in 2024. My God. He's going to go after the trade unionists next. What? What happens when he marches on the beer hall? That's got to be what's next. These people. The video posted to Trump's Truth Social account details, quote, what happens after Donald Trump wins, with the narrator reading hypothetical headlines like economy booms and border is closed. Hypothetical or prophetic, whichever way you want to put it. Styled as a World War I era newspaper clipping, under one headline that reads, what's next for America is a reference to the, quote, creation of a unified Reich. Another headline in the video states 15 million illegal immigrants deported next to the start and end days of World War I. The term Reich is often associated with Nazi Germany under Adolf Hitler, who designated Germany as a Third Reich from 1933 to 1945. Caroline Leavitt, a Trump campaign spokesperson, said in a statement that the video, which remains on Trump's page, was not created by the campaign. It was reposted by a staffer who clearly did not see the word while president was in court. America, stop scrolling and pay attention. Donald Trump is not playing games. He's telling America exactly what he intends to do if he regains power. Sorry. Let me just be clear. This is James Singer, whoever the hell that is. Oh, Biden campaign spokesperson. He said, this statement, I mean, clearly this blurry, sort of difficult to read word in a video posted by somebody else is clearly the secret heart of Donald Trump's plans. This is the truth unveiled. Obviously, Trump is signaling to everybody by psychically dictating what a staffer reposts before. I mean, he does that after he psychically dictates to the movie creator what words to put in. Truly diabolical. You might look around and go, yeah, there's no evidence that Trump's a Nazi. That's because you're not looking hard enough, okay? And the fact that there's no evidence is proof of just how devious he is. You know, if he wasn't as slick and evil, then it would be more obvious. But because there's no evidence, that's just more proof of how true it is, right? I mean, that's got to be the case, right? So James Singer, this Biden spokesperson, says clearly, I mean, it's admitted now. He basically got up and threw the Roman salute, and now he's got a tiny little mustache. He is Hitler now. It's true. So let me read this in a more appropriate way. America, stop scrolling and paying attention. Pay attention. Donald Trump's not playing games. He's telling America exactly what he intends to do if he regains power. Rule as a dictator over a unified Reich. We have to stop him. Shut up. Shut up, losers. You're just mad that nobody makes videos for you. You're just mad that nobody makes cool meme videos to troll your opponents. You can't even understand how you're doing exactly the thing that everybody wanted you to do. We never would have seen that ad. I never would have seen that ad. I certainly wouldn't have played it twice if it weren't for the outrage that this caused, meaning it worked, meaning the trolling worked, meaning you're all fools, and that by using a German word vaguely related to historical Nazism, you're all foaming at the mouth and posting this ad over and over on your own pages. Let's actually talk about what's going on here with Trump. How will he unify our Reich? That's the question I think we're all asking. Sorry. We'll get serious here. Talk about the actual despotism going on, not the hypothetical nonsensical schizophrenic imaginings of eventual, you know, potential non-existent despotism, but the actual real life, honest to God despotism that's happening right now. In this case, the ruling regime in America is prosecuting its primary political opponent in an unfair and baseless show trial that is collapsing in real time. As seen in reports, Trump trial reaches crescendo as tempers fray in the courtrooms. Trump's lawyer, Todd Blanche, argued prosecutors failed to prove their case that Trump intended to mislead voters in 2016 by falsifying financial records to disguise a hush money payment to adult film star Stormy Daniels, and he implored Merchant not to hand jurors a case so reliant on testimony from Cohen, a confessed liar. Now, basically everything in this trial relies on Michael Cohen. He was the fixer, the facilitator. He was the one that actually paid the money. He was the one that gave the invoice to Trump. He was the middleman for this nefarious payment, apparently. He has been convicted of lying. He spent time in jail because of his dishonesty. And then during the trial, during cross-examination, he actually admitted that the conversation that he had with Trump, where he says, I called Trump on this day, I told him what I was going to use this money for, so he knew, so he was a part of this. Turns out that phone call never happened. Turns out they got Michael Cohen to admit, yeah, maybe I did never tell Trump about that. Yeah, maybe Trump didn't even know about this payment that was happening. He admitted that on the stand. So this convicted serial liar, turncoat, backstabber, perjurer, admitted that the one crucial conversation central to the heart of this entire case might not have ever happened, actually, and according to phone records, never did. That's interesting. So that's an interesting development, isn't it? from Gateway Pundit. A fuming Judge Merchant runs interference for Bragg, shouts at Trump defense witness Robert Costello, "Get out of the courtroom now! Get out of the courtroom now!" Because he was groaning, apparently. Apparently he groaned. President Trump was back in Manhattan court on Monday in Alvin Bragg's Soviet-style hush money lawfare trial. The prosecutors earlier Monday rolled out their star witness, Michael Cohen, a convicted perjurer, to take the witness stand. Cohen shocked the public when he admitted he stole tens of thousands of dollars from Trump and then lied to the Trump Org CFO, Alan Weiselberg. After the prosecution rested their case, Trump's defense team called Robert Costello to the witness stand. Recall that Robert Costello previously blasted Michael Cohen as a convicted perjurer and Bragg's prosecutors cherry-picked emails. Well, apparently, crooked Judge Merchant excoriated Costello and cleared the courtroom. Merchant got mad, apparently. The judge got mad, began excoriating Robert Costello on the stand for making a few offhanded remarks and rolling his eyes during the testimony. So this is the exchange. Merchant says, "Are you staring me down right now?" Costello says, "I'm not." Merchant, "Get out of the courtroom now! Get out of the courtroom! Are you staring me down? You looking at me? Are you looking at me, boy? I'm the judge. You don't look at me. You look at me when you're not looking at me." Video cuts out. Crazy. Crazy. Merchant is absolutely seething over Costello's damning testimony. The type of treatment Costello, an experienced prosecutor who once worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office of New York in the 1970s and early 80s, is receiving on the witness stand from the judge is disgusting, Paul Ingracia says. Merchant is visibly perturbed, condescending, and downright abusive of the witness on the stand. Outrageous behavior from a judge and totally inappropriate for any courtroom. No decorum whatsoever. Can't say I'm surprised necessarily, but it is sad. It is sad and pathetic that this is the state of things, where the judge overseeing the first criminal prosecution of a former Trump, a former president ever, is like yelling at the witness, like, "You looking at me? You staring me down? Get out of the courtroom." It's like, my God. Were you staring me down? I mean, what is the difference between staring you down and just looking at you? I think the difference is whether or not the person you're looking at, the person being stared at, is a emotional little girl, little worm person. So the Bragg prosecutor asked Costello, "Did you say Michael Cohen was acting like a drama queen, yes or no?" Costello, "I said I didn't know if Michael Cohen was acting like a drama queen." Merchant again chastises Costello's from the stand. "Would you just answer yes or no? Did you say Michael Cohen was acting like a drama queen, yes or no?" "I said I don't know if Michael..." So he says the quote, "I don't know if Michael Cohen's acting like a drama queen." He tries to clarify that. So the answer would just be no then? You don't like drama queens, do you? Who does? Who likes drama queens? It's a derogatory statement for a reason. Judge Merchant then abruptly ended the day's proceedings with "Have a good night." Merchant, visibly exasperated, hastily ends the day's proceedings, implores jurors not to research the case through media, email, telephone, text, or the internet, reminds them that they should not Google or discuss the case outside of the courtroom, abruptly says, "Have a nice day," or have a good night, and shuts it down. Yeah, judges have a very, very big impact on the court case. You know, in a lot of cases, it can just be the attitude of the judge towards various witnesses is a signal to jurors how seriously they should take them, whether or not they should be frustrated with them. You see this time and time again in any court proceeding, criminal, civil, whatever. Is you'll hear interviews with the jury afterwards, and they don't really know the intricacies of courtroom etiquette, obviously, like the lawyers and the judge do. So they rely on signals from those people to understand who's in and who's out of bounds. And so if a judge is constantly sniping at one lawyer, at one side's lawyers, while giving the other a pass, jurors see that, and you'll see interviews with them where they go, "Well, that, you know, that first prosecutor was really getting out of bounds, and the judge had to step in and And she shut him down a few times. I just don't think that's appropriate. They have no idea. They have no idea what's right and what's wrong. I mean, there are processes in the courtroom that are where you are supposed to deliberately be rude at times, right? That's what objections are. You jump up and you interject. You stop people from talking. Like, there are things that in natural conversation would be very rude and out of bounds, but that are required in a courtroom. So if you don't know the difference between those two things, you rely on the judges and the lawyers and the signals they're sending in order to determine who to trust, who's doing correctly, who's, you know, maybe going out of bounds because their case isn't as good. All these things get interpreted in the jury's mind and contribute to the overall decision that they make. So when you've got this judge obviously getting visibly frustrated, and this is the crazy thing, is that, you know, what he's mad about is the facial expression of the witness. And you'll see this in any courtroom, right? You're supposed to just sit there and politely listen. Like if you've got a witness on the stand, the defendant can't be sitting there going, yeah, you know, like, you know, you can't be doing that sort of stuff. And so a judge will step in and stop that. But in this case, it's the judge fuming and being out of control and showing his emotion in an inappropriate way. It might seem subtle. It might seem somewhat insignificant. But without the very severe etiquette of courtrooms, the entire justice system collapsed. We'll turn on the other side and see what CNN says about this. The last glimmer of hope for the Democrats to defeat Donald Trump is being snuffed out in real time. That tends to happen when you build a house on sand. When you build a sham trial off of the statements of known perjurers and liars and people who themselves have over and over again insisted that the thing never happened, like Stormy Daniels, it's probably not going to go well for you. Not that it's not already been effective. I mean, it has been effective. They've kept Trump off the campaign trail. They've kept him sitting this ridiculous trial day in and day out in what should be the heart of the presidential campaign. They have, of course, provided endless headlines against him, endless salacious details. I don't know how more people can't see through this. I don't know why more people aren't feeling like their intelligence is being insulted, that they're expected just to go along with this. And you said it a million times, but it's sad what they've done to the American people. It's sad that at this point, the liberals know that this is nothing. They don't care. They aren't following this. They aren't shocked by the revelations. They aren't horrified at what's being unveiled. I mean, it's nothing, right? They just don't like Trump. They want Trump to go away. And if that's got to happen through a show trial, they don't care. That's fine with them. It's very sad. It's very sad to see Americans fall for this. But that's what's happening. Now, the judge is considering a defense motion to dismiss the case entirely. Now that the prosecution has rested, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg charged Trump with 34 counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. Trump's pled not guilty. After Michael Cohen's fourth day of testimony was complete, the prosecution rested its case and Trump defense attorneys called two of their own witnesses. At the end of court for the day, Trump defense attorney Todd Blanche asked for an immediate order of dismissal, saying there is, quote, no evidence that the filings or business records at the center of the case were false and that there was absolutely no false business filings. That's how that, at its core, is how weak this case is. In this case, it's 34 felony charges for falsifying business records, and there are literally no false business records. It's like you're halfway through a murder case, and the defense gets up and goes, the victim is alive. They're sitting right there. He couldn't have killed his wife. His wife is sitting next to him in the courtroom right now. What is this? There's no evidence of a crime at all. I mean, this is how weak this whole thing is. Blanche said there's no dispute that Cohen acted as a personal attorney for Trump in 2017 and that there's no evidence of or intent by Trump to mislead, hide, or falsify business records. Has been proven, hasn't been shown. What has been shown has been nothing but witness testimony from, again, known perjurers and liars and deceivers and people who went on entire media campaigns in 2018 saying that the affair never even happened, like Stormy Daniels. Which, again, if this was like any other court, these people never would have been brought to the witness stand because they would know that the defense would be able to show that they were liars. And it happens over and over. Basically, any murder trial you want to watch, there's going to be one point where somebody lied about something to the cops. And there's always an exchange where it's like, oh, so that was a lie. And the person's like, yes, I lied about that. And they're like, oh, so you lied about that, but you're not lying about it this time, right? No, you were lying then, but not now, right? What's different about then and now that you'd lie then, but not now? And that's the question that has to be asked about Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen. So, Stormy, when you said that this never happened, you were lying. Yeah, I was lying. Okay, so you were lying why? Because it benefited you? Okay, so why are you lying now? Do you have a benefit here? Is something here benefiting you? It would benefit you to lie in this case too, wouldn't it? So anyway, they're asking that the whole thing just be thrown out, which would be both a fulfillment of justice and hilarious. So Blanche said that Trump paid Cohen $35,000 as a monthly retainer, which is what the records state, and that there was no evidence from any witness to prove any criminal intent. Reflecting on the prosecution's case, Blanche pointed to the alleged catch-and-kill strategy used to prevent a demonstrably false story a Trump Tower doorman had about Trump from being published. How on earth is keeping a false story from voters criminal? Blanche asked, adding it was not catch-and-kill and certainly not criminal, not a criminal catch-and-kill. Interrupt a story before it goes to press. Especially if it's false. So basically what they're saying is, how can it be a crime to stop a lie from being spread? There's no way this court should let this case go to jury with Mr. Cohen's testimony, Blanche said, adding that Cohen has lied under oath in the past and during the current criminal trial in Merchant's courtroom. Merchant asked Blanche if he should find Mr. Cohen not credible by a matter of law, to which Blanche said yes. So you want me to take it out of the jury's hands? Merchant asked, with Blanche responding that Cohen's entire testimony should not be considered by the jury. Merchant told Blanche that if Cohen's lies were irrefutable, then he would be able to convince the jury of that. Prosecution then argued that under the New York State falsifying business records statute, anyone causing the falsified records can be punished. And in this case, that would be Cohen, actually. And this is the crazy thing. We'll play a video of CNN's truly desperate attempt to downplay what I'm about to read, but they can't really at the end of the day. CNN legal analyst says Cohen stealing is more serious than Trump's charges. A legal analyst for CNN claims Michael Cohen's admission that he stole money from the Trump organization is actually more serious than the falsified business record charges the former president faces. During cross-examination on Monday, Cohen admitted that he stole from the Trump organization by upcharging them tens of thousands of dollars as part of the hush money reimbursement plan he agreed with Donald Trump. During the coverage, analyst Ellie Honig said that the practice, which is considered larceny in the New York State, was crushing the prosecution's credibility. So he admits to stealing tens of thousands of dollars, which is a worse crime than falsifying business records, the crime for which he is testifying against Trump. Insane. But now let's hear how Jake Tapper on CNN tries just hilariously, ridiculously to downplay what was revealed here. He's reading the transcript. And he's just like, that's no big deal. You'll see. It's pretty hilarious. We'll stop and comment on this as we go through. Let's go now to clip number two. This is CNN trying to downplay the actual criminal behavior of the main witness in the Trump trial.
A week ago, Monday, May 13th, Susan Hoffinger with the prosecution did get out from Michael Cohen that he pocketed some of the money. But it was done so in such a way that I think a lot of people completely missed it, certainly me. And it was done so in a way that was not hammered home to the jury. And I'm not going to read the entire thing, but this in the testimony about Michael Cohen paying back Red Finch, this organization that did these shady things for the Trump campaign, such as bogus spectators at his announcement and bogus online polls that they goosed. He said, Hoffinger, did you pay him the full $50,000? That was the bill. Cohen, no, ma'am. Hoffinger, and given that you didn't pay him the whole $50,000, why did you put $50,000 down on there, on the bill? Cohen, well, for the previous year and a half, I had told Alan, meaning Alan Weisselberg, the CFO, look, I laid it out. My hope was to get it, the money from Alan onto it so that I can give it to him, but it never happened. But I constantly reminded him because I did want him, you know, to receive the funds. Hoffinger, did you pay Red Finch less than $50,000? Cohen, I did. Hoffinger, okay. And why did you then ask for $50,000 back? She's asking, why did you ask for $50,000 back if you paid them less than $50,000? Cohen, because that's what was owed, and I didn't feel Mr. Trump deserved the benefit of the difference. Hoffinger, and if you were going to get $50,000, but you paid out less than $50,000, were you going to keep the rest of it yourself? Cohen, that's what I ended up doing. But that's it. And I have to say, Susan Hoffinger in.
So that's it. I mean, that's it. He just admits to stealing tens of thousands of dollars. That's all. I mean, but that's it. And you can hear sort of the mental gymnastics these people even play with themselves. Where, first of all, the way Jake Tapper covers all of this, just the tones and the words he's using, is downplaying this. You could equally play it up, right? This man stole tens of thousands of dollars from somebody who was trusting him with his life, right? He was his lawyer. He had his secrets. He could have destroyed him if he's trying to. I guess he can't actually destroy him, but here's somebody who is bound by oath, by law, to serve the interest of his the person he's representing. And he steals tens of thousands of dollars from him, or as Jake Tapper puts it, so he pocketed a lot of the money. So he pocketed it. It's pocketed sounds a lot better than stole, because he stole the money. It's not really that complicated. Michael Cohen owed Trump tens of thousands of dollars that he didn't pay back. He charged him money that he knew he didn't deserve. He stole tens of thousands of dollars from him. He thought he could get away with it. You can even hear in the words he uses, he's just one of these. He's a con artist. He's a grifter. He's a thief. He's a criminal. He's got a criminal mind. He's the type of guy that will, be walking around the store with a candy bar, slip it in his pocket, just thinking, well, I'll just walk out, and if I get caught, I'll say, oh, I forgot. I put that in my pocket. Whoops, I wasn't actually trying to steal it. I wanted to pay for it. I just, I had to put it in my pocket. I needed my hands, and I forgot it was in there. I just go, they can't prove it was on purpose that I did that. He literally is like, I really wanted to pay. I wanted so badly to pay. It never happened. Right, you stole the money. That's what that means. You stole the money. There's a scene from a Peep Show, British sitcom, where the one character is lying. I can't remember what he's lying about, but I think he does something on purpose, and they go, and he's like, it was an accident. And the guy's like, that wasn't an accident. First guy was like, well, it could have been. It definitely could have been. You cannot prove it wasn't an accident, what I did here. Right? I wanted to return it. I meant to, it was an accident. I meant to return it. I accidentally didn't return it. Like, that wasn't an accident. Well, but it could have been. Could have been, though. Certainly could. I made sure that it could have looked like an accident when I stole that money. What he says is, I didn't feel Mr. Trump deserved the difference. Because he was a moral action stealing from Trump. He thought morally, Trump didn't deserve what he had. So I stole it from him as an act of righteous retribution. I felt he didn't deserve the difference. Don't let the rhetorical back and forth confuse you. He stole tens of thousands of dollars from Donald Trump because he thought he could get away with it. When he got busted, he said both, well, I really wanted to not steal the money. I really tried hard not to steal the money, but turned out I did. And I did because I didn't think Trump deserved the difference. No, he didn't think he would notice the difference. He thought he'd get away with it. So Ellie Honig, the legal analyst for CNN, says the fact that he was never charged with larceny for stealing this money is important because stealing $60,000 through fraud, which would be larceny in New York State, is a more serious of a crime than falsifying business records, the thing that Trump's on trial for. So let's go back to CNN here as Jake Tapper tries desperately to downplay what has been revealed, is that Michael Cohen committed a bigger crime than Trump did in this whole situation because he stole from Trump as a moral action. Let's go back to CNN now.
Cohen, because that's what was owed, and I didn't feel Mr. Trump deserved the benefit of the difference. Yeah. Hoffinger, and if you were going to get $50,000, but you paid out less than $50,000, were you going to keep the rest of it yourself? Cohen, that's what I ended up doing. But that's it. And I have to say, she does not, Susan Hoffinger, in this direct testimony, she does not underline Laura Coates, you did this, and that's larceny, that's illegal. And so we should note that some of this memo includes an inflated bill, but we should not use that to discount the rest of it. She didn't connect the dots, and she didn't explain to the jury, this is a crime that you're confessing mm-hmm. to.
And I am shocked that they did not do so, because this has given such ammunition as to possibly fatally undermine the prosecution's case.
As it should.
You want to go through at nauseam all the reasons why you're fronting, why this is not somebody that has been a truth teller his entire life or with the organization. They went to such great pains to talk about his criminal convictions and his lies in the past. Frankly, Todd Blanch also did on day one and two. Now we're in day three of the cross-examination.
Yeah, the whole case is predicated on the testimony of known liars, people convicted of perjury. It's ridiculous. Of course, this shouldn't exist. Finish up on the other side and take your phone calls as well. Moving on to some international news here. I also remind you to go to InfoWarsStore.com to support everything that we do. For yourself as well. I would encourage you to buy these products no matter who was selling them. The fact that your purchase goes directly towards funding this program, The Alex Jones Show, The War Room, Bandai Video, and more. It's really just a cherry on the sundae. It's the icing on the cake. The cake itself are the supplements that are well worth it at full price, but often on massive discount, 40% off things like Nitric Boost today. All right, we'll move on from the Trump trial. Hilarious as it is. There is some other things around the Trump trial. Obviously, it's not working. The Democrats have absolutely nothing. They have nothing to tell the American people other than, right, stealing our money to give to their constituents, whether that's supporting some sort of reparations in whatever form that takes, social justice, saying we'll take money from white people and give it to black people, so vote for us. Like, that's basically where it's devolved down to. Or, you know, if you took out a student loan for a worthless degree, then don't worry, we will pay the banks with taxpayer money. Just straight up bribing the populace with the public money. Because there's nothing new about corruption, and they're following the same path that ancient Romans did, precipitating their eventual collapse into empire. So they have nothing. Quite literally nothing to offer anybody. They can't make an economic argument. They can't make a military, geopolitical argument. They certainly can't make a, domestic tranquility argument. It would run counter to all of their professed beliefs to actually support American unity, national cohesion, since they rely on a variety of intersectional groups of people. It doesn't really work to say we should all come together as Americans and see our identity as Americans as the preeminent way we identify ourselves. That doesn't work. So what they have to offer is abortion, transgenderism, homosexuality, showing porn to kids in school, and that's about it. So we'll kill your babies, castrate your babies, sexualize your babies, vote Democrat. And I mean, I guess it makes sense that they're so desperate to get these trials to work, because it's not that they're failing to make their case. It's not that the Democrats are saying, look, Trump says he's the best at this, but we're the best at this, and here's the evidence, and let's make an argument, and Trump says he wants border security, but we're actually better at border security. Like, it's not because they're failing to make the argument. It's not because they're failing to reach people. It's because their ideas are bad. Their ideas are completely, ubiquitously, entirely designed to destroy America, American unity, American power, and success. So it makes sense that they got to find something, because typically in a democratic republic, in a representative democracy, or representative republic rather, you would want to like either tailor your policy to fit the will of the people, or try to express to the people why they should come around to your policy. But there's no argument for illegal immigration. It just doesn't exist. All they have is shame and guilt and an attempt to redefine what America is as being a racial hodgepodge, bastardized, historyless corporate farm, essentially. And to claim that you're betraying your American values by not opening up your border to literally everybody else. Anybody in the world. So that's ridiculous. And if they can't berate and just mentally crush you into submitting to them by convincing you that you're a bad person, if you care about self-protection, if you have any sort of instinct to preserve your life, your way of life, your family, your religion, they have to convince you that that in and of itself is bad and evil. And failure to do that, they got nothing to offer. So when it comes to illegal immigrants, more than half of U.S. voters don't just want illegal immigrants to stop. They want them rounded up. That's the new poll. Democrats may have effectively convinced their base during the Trump administration that building a wall and securing a border is racist, but the Biden's regime's open border policy, in which illegal aliens from around the world are given free housing, transportation, the opportunity to vote, and get out of jail cards to reside in the United States indefinitely, is outraging voters on both sides of the aisle. A whopping 56% of registered voters said most or all illegal immigrants in the U.S. should be rounded up and kicked out of the country, according to a new Reuters Ipsos poll. So just put yourself in the mindset of the Democrats, where you see this poll, you see that despite a constant barrage of propaganda from every mainstream media site, from every Hollywood studio, from every talking head and celebrity, I mean, despite the fact that you have total domination in the mainstream cultural sphere, you cannot convince people that surrendering their country is a good thing. Less than half of them, at least. So if you're a Democrat, you're sitting there thinking, okay, either we have to try to win these people over by convincing them that we can handle the illegal immigration issue, which is a hard ask because the last 4 years has been continuous evidence that they cannot handle this. So kind of hard to make that case. And so do you actually change your policy and say, look, before we were open border, but we realized that's bad, so now we're going to change? They're not going to do that either, because their ultimate goal is the total demographic destruction of the United States. So they can't go back on this. They can't not embrace open borders. So all they have is to try to destroy Trump through lawfare. All they have is to try to convince you that he's a secret Nazi. That's all they have. It's pathetic. It's not going to work. And because this is happening, and because Trump is so obviously succeeding against all odds and only increasing speed against these headwinds. Illegal aliens are rushing to the border because they're afraid Trump is going to win in November. Illegal immigrants are apparently paying attention to political poll numbers in the United States. Many of them are afraid that Trump is going to win in November, and so they're rushing to the border as a result. Yes, they're rushing. They can't wait to be rounded up. They really want to get across the border now so they don't miss out on the opportunity to be seized by Border Patrol, shoved into camp, and sent back home. They're just desperate. They really, you know, if they don't do it now, you know, Trump's going to be president, then they're not going to be able to get in. So they got to get in now if they want to be part of the deportation roundup. It's a once-in-a-lifetime event. The military-style expulsion of criminal aliens, illegal invaders within our nation. So if they don't get in now, so go now. If you're in South America and you, I mean, you don't want to miss out on the opportunity to be deported by Donald Trump. So go now to the border, get across. Migrants are coming to the U.S. now because they fear President Biden could lose re-election in November and Donald Trump will shut the border. Colombian brothers Ricardo and Sebastian spoke with the Post after crossing the Arizona border illegally last week. They said they've been receiving assistance at the Yuma Regional Center for Border Health. Border Health. As they waited for the bus to Phoenix Airport, where they later caught a flight to New Jersey. We think with the elections, it will be harder. We don't want Trump, Sebastian said. The brothers claimed they had crossed the southern border and turned themselves in to Border Patrol agents in Yuma. They said they faced threats from criminals in Colombia, leading them to flee. The Trump campaign could make an ad based on this report.
We don't want Trump to win. We want to commit crime. We don't want you to have a security guard. We don't like the dog in the house that we're trying to break into.
Yeah, duh. So yeah, they're paying attention. They're paying attention. And they're desperate to be a part of this deportation bonanza. It's going to be a bonanza. And they don't want to miss out. So they're trying to cross now, get into America, have a couple months of living off the teat of the American taxpayer, get their laundry done by the hotel, get the free daycare, play PS2 for a few days. And then you get a free bus ride back to Mexico. So get in now, cross the border now, while you still can, if you want to be a part of this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be hurled from this country by Donald Trump himself. You know, I was driving down the street yesterday, and I saw a guy at a gas station. Well, it was yesterday. It was Sunday night after doing the show. And so I'm driving home, and I'm thinking about doing the show, and I'm thinking about what I was saying and stuff. And I see a guy at a gas pump next to a big truck, and he's listening to something on his phone. So, of course, I just thought, you know, what if he was listening to me? Wouldn't it be funny if he was listening to InfoWars? So that's actually happened before. It used to happen a lot before we got kicked off YouTube and Twitter and stuff. I remember early days when I was Alex's cameraman, and we'd be walking around downtown Austin filming with Roger Stone. And literally, we'd be filming there on the street, and we'd walk by somebody who was watching it or listening to it on his phone as they walk, and you go, wait, I'm watching you right now. It was a great time back before they realized how powerful InfoWars was and took steps to remove us from those platforms. That was why, because that type of event would happen, and we'd capture it live on stream. But anyway, so I was thinking, and I was thinking, oh, man, it was the guy who was listening to his phone was a Hispanic guy. I was thinking, oh, wouldn't that be funny if he was listening? I was like, I hope I didn't say anything offensive today. Ooh, if he is listening, I hope I didn't do that accent. Hope I didn't do that Mexican accent I did. Accents are funny. I don't care who you are. In high school, I was the only white kid in my Spanish class. Most of the other kids were Mexican, but I would always do that accent. And the teacher thought it was hilarious, so she would always call on me to read. So, like, for an entire year, Spanish class, every single time it was to read, Harrison, why don't you do it? Do your voice. They all thought it was hilarious. So, I don't know what you're so upset about.
basically grew up in Mexico. I went to inner city high school in Houston, Texas. I'm more Mexican than most Mexicans, but regardless. I was just thinking about InfoWars and the power of InfoWars. And the fact is that I shouldn't have to worry about offending people, because I try very hard to express myself in a way that is clear and doesn't lump people into groups in a negative way. In other words, if I'm talking about Mexicans, I got a lot of respect for Mexicans. I like Mexicans. I like Mexico. I feel jealous of Mexican culture in America a lot. Most of my neighbors are Hispanic, and every weekend they got bands playing. They got their little kids are dressed up in suits and dresses to do some quinceañera, or they're hidden piñatas. I'm not trying to be stereotypical here. I'm saying I actually enjoy it. There's actually a culture of family and community and getting together and playing music and really beautiful things. So when I talk about Mexico or Mexicans, that's what I'm talking about. I would never associate your average Mexican or Mexican American with illegal immigrants, because illegal immigrants are people that have made a choice. They're people that have broken a law. They're people that know that what they're doing is wrong and immoral, but they do it anyway. In the same way that, I just don't want to give off the wrong impression about who we're talking about when we're talking about illegal immigration, or when we're talking about the ADL, who I call the Jewish overlords. I know people are trained at this point to want to respond, as if it's them I'm talking about. Like I'm talking about, your average Jewish person when I'm talking about Jonathan Greenblatt. And I think the beautiful thing about InfoWars is we never let our eyes get off the prize. We never let ourselves fall into the things that we ourselves are often outraged by. In other words, when they say white people did slavery, it's like, well, I did. Some white people did, I guess. Yeah. But I didn't. And you reject any complicity in that. In the same way, Jews should reject what the ADL does, just like whites reject what the KKK does, just like Hispanic Americans who are here legally should reject what the illegal immigrants do. It's about what you do, not who you are. And at the end of the day, I'm extremely proud that we have a worldwide audience, people of every race, color, and creed, who can understand the way that identity is manipulated to take advantage of people and to get people to defend things they wouldn't otherwise defend by making them think that they're under attack when they're not. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, but that's what I was thinking the other day. Because I fall into it too, right? If I'm talking about illegal immigrants and I see a Hispanic person, listening to the show, and I'm like, ooh, I hope he wasn't offended. Why would he be offended? If you're not a legal immigrant, don't worry about it. If you are, then you know what you did. Then you know what you do is wrong. And you got no excuse. Okay. I was going to cover this yesterday. I had some videos. I didn't put any videos in today, but it's good to see this development. So basically, last week, we showed the video of the cat fight in the U.S. Congress with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Crockett and AOC. Yelling at each other about eyelashes. It was very bad. It was very bad. And then over the weekend, there was headline after headline about Representative Crockett says it was racist what Marjorie Taylor Greene said. So Marjorie Taylor Greene said something about Crockett's fake eyelashes. I was not aware that black people don't have eyelashes. I wasn't aware that was a racist thing. How could that be? It's just not a race. That just makes no sense. And the odd thing is that in her response, Crockett was racist. She talked about bleach blonde, bad built body or something. Black people have eyelashes. That's what I thought. That's what I thought. But apparently if you talk about a black woman with fake eyelashes, you're being racist. So I didn't know this, but apparently black people don't have eyelashes. And this is how stupid it is. They try to make this a racist thing. When in reality, it was Crockett who talked about Marjorie Taylor Greene's bleach blonde hair, beach, whatever she said. You know, it wasn't Marjorie Taylor Greene going, "Your ashy black skin." It's like, whoa, man. That is basically what Crockett said. Marjorie Taylor Greene talked about her fake eyelashes. And so I was going to cover that to just sort of, you know, explain how bizarre it was that not only was what Marjorie Taylor Greene said not even remotely racist, but what Crockett said actually was. But bizarrely, strangely enough, CNN, Jake Tapper did it for me. CNN host confronts Representative Crockett on her response to Representative Greene during House clash. Quote, "You did the same thing." CNN Jake Tapper accuses Representative Crockett of doing the same thing Representative Greene did in an attack on physical appearance. CNN's Jake Tapper confronted a Democrat Representative Jasmine Crockett on Sunday about her response to Marjorie Taylor Greene's attacks on her physical appearance and accused the Democrat of doing the same thing. CNN host Jake Tapper told Crockett she hit back at MGT criticism of her appearance a thousandfold by referring to her bleach blonde, bad build butch body. "You've really embraced what you said. You're printing it on swag," Tapper told Crockett. Yeah, so now Crockett is selling merchandise with this insult on it. "How would you respond to say it's inappropriate to respond to an attack on somebody's physical appearance? And you can hear Congresswoman AOC say, you know, you shouldn't be attacking somebody's physical appearance, but then you did the same thing. You attacked her physical appearance in an actual racist way, I would add. During the House Oversight Committee hearing on Thursday, Greene and Crockett's fake eyelashes are messing with what you're reading." That's what Greene said about Crockett. "Democrats tried and failed to strike the comment from the record, prompting Crockett to ask Chairman James Comer, quote, if somebody on this committee starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built butch body, would that not be engaging in personalities, correct? Crockett told Tapper she was asking for clarification. No, I was just asking for clarification on the ruling. You know, they're children. The Democrats are children. That's what it is. Bad, like not good kids, not decent, fun, nice kids. They're like devious little prankster children. That's what they remind me of. Who will do something that they know is wrong, that they know is bad, and when they get caught, instead of just fessing up, instead of just going, yeah, well, I did that, and yeah, it's a little bit different, they actually try to act like what they it's kind of hard to explain. I'm kind of having trouble expressing this, but Marjorie Taylor Greene, she started it, right? She said, yeah, maybe your fake eyelashes are messing with your reading. That was snarky. I was off the cuff. I wouldn't say it was insulting necessarily. There's Marjorie Taylor Greene flailing around. Is this looped or should you just do this? About an hour. Yeah, that's she's getting CrossFit. So yeah, it was an off the cuff. It was kind of a snarky answer, obviously. And then Crockett's like, "Oh, so you're saying that if I said that she was bleach blonde with a bad built body, that would be fine?" Okay, so you're just, all right, you're responding to the snarkiness with like a even more snarky, even more insulting, actually kind of racist thing to say. And then when Tapper asked her about this, she's like, "I was just trying to get clarification on the... No, I was just trying to get clarification. I was confused." So, I mean, it's like, do you think you're fooling... What are you doing? Are you trying to fool people? You think people go... No, she was just asking for clarity. She was confused asking for clarification. If you're going to be a snarky bitch, be a snarky bitch. Open up the phone lines for your calls, the third hour of today's show. We're going to have Matt Baker on today, but he wanted to push it to tomorrow because he's breaking a huge story. Let me see what he said about this, because I don't want to give away anything. I've seen the video, but I don't want to spoil his fun. But he's been tweeting about this and sort of hinting at what was happening. So let me find. You tweet too much, Matt. It should be at the top of your page. Here it is. So he says, never before internal footage between the CEO of Moderna, Stephen Bancel, and leading venture capital firm Jean-Francois Formello. They talk about very disturbing things. So he basically got, actually a whistleblower found him because of his appearances on InfoWars. He knew who he was, and he approached, I'll let him tell the story, but he's got this footage of an internal meeting with Moderna, and they break down the whole timeline of the COVID vaccine. And he is not suicidal. Matt just wanted to remind everybody. He's not suicidal. He's looking very forward to revealing this information. So he's going to come on today, but he's been working so hard on getting this story right, because it's like a big deal. And he's like, we've been talking on the phone. He's just like, I just don't want to like this to just fizzle out. Like, I want to put this out. And it's got to have the attention on it deserves. Not because he's self-important, obviously, but because if you don't package things right, if you don't present them right, things that should have massive impact can just go under the radar. So he was going to come on today, but he's really putting a heck of a lot of work into getting this presentation right. So tomorrow he'll be joining us to break down this exclusive leaked video. So be sure to tune in for that. So we're without a guest this third hour, and we will take your phone calls throughout that. We're going to get into some Ukraine news here. There's some Israel news. There's some interesting geopolitical news out of Haiti and elsewhere. But for the moment, let's stick to politics. I'm going to read a couple interesting things about Biden, I guess you might say, from InfoWars, published this morning. Almost 50% of small businesses say they're not going to survive a second Biden term. A new Red Balloon and Public Square report reveals that nearly half of small businesses in the United States say they believe they definitely or probably don't stand a chance to survive another 4 years of Joe Biden's presidency. The survey, which polled 80,000 small businesses, found that 22.4% of responders think they definitely don't stand a chance of surviving another 4 years under the Biden administration, while 26.2% say they're probably not going to survive another Biden term. Quote, there's nothing I can afford to do in addition to what I'm already doing. If things don't change, I'll be finished, one business owner said in a report. Moreover, the findings reveal that the precarious state of many small businesses, with 40% delaying bill payments and 70% putting staffing plans on hold to conserve cash flow, reported last week on the fact that the number of missed rent payments is reaching record highs as small businesses are not able to make their most basic payments on things like office space rentals. And this, of course, is by design. This is on purpose. This is the desired outcome of the programs being rolled out now. Inflation is an invisible tax. It hits small businesses the hardest. Small businesses can be crushed under the weight of regulation that bigger multinational corporations have the legal expertise to deal with. If this was a problem, if the elite in America saw this as a problem, it could be solved. It could be fixed. Small businesses could be helped. They could be incentivized. There are lots of things that they could do if this wasn't the intended outcome of the economic policies, but it is. It is the intended outcome. This was obviously the intended outcome of the COVID shutdown as well, as small businesses collapsed by the tens of thousands, while businesses like Amazon and Walmart and Target were allowed to stay open and thrived and expanded and made trillions of extra dollars. On purpose, by design. And then Biden in an effort to downplay and distract from the inflation, which is a direct result of monetary policy, of printing money, of government debt, and a number of other government-controlled executive branch decisions. In order to distract from that, he constantly plays up shrinkflation, which is a real thing, but it's not because of the greed of corporations. Maybe that's a part of it, but it's not the primary part. But if it was the primary part, let's say Joe Biden is correct about what he says. That there's not any, it's not that inflation is out of control because year over year we keep printing money, and that, you know, 4 years ago the Fed was saying we're doing everything we can to increase inflation, and then when inflation started they said actually it doesn't exist, and then when it got really bad they said it does exist but it's good, and that they just keep doing the policies on purpose to maximize the inflation. Like, the forget that, it's because Snickers bars are smaller than they used to be. So if that was the case, if shrinkflation was what's actually happening here, which doesn't even make sense, because why are houses so much more expensive now than they used to be? Are the houses being shrunken? It just makes no sense. But just let's take it as true. Let's accept this lie. Then it's those same major corporations that are benefiting from Biden's policies. If this is corporate greed out of control, then why are your policies directly, constantly contributing to the growth of major multinational corporations like Amazon, Walmart, McDonald's? And why are they constantly crushing and eviscerating a small businessman who's just trying to keep his head above water? So if that was real, if shrinkflation was really what's going on here, I'm sure there's some of that, but again, that's a consequence of just actual inflation. But if it was, then the people he's blaming and he's saying he's working against and he's going to bring to heel and he's going to stop from taking advantage of you by shrinking your product size while charging you more, it's those same companies that are absorbing all of the business from the small businesses that are being shut down, that are consolidating into larger and larger conglomerates to crush any competition arising up from the small business realm. And this, again, you know, we've got the video. We should really just have the video on standby because I mention it so often. But it would be great if it was just Klaus Schwab saying it. But the fact is, Klaus Schwab is on a stage with Joe Biden, and they're both agreeing that the middle class is an impediment to the implementation of their plans and that it must be destroyed. So we've got more videos today. There were two videos today sort of going viral of the same thing we see over and over. Women sitting in cars, making TikToks, saying, I can't afford to live. What is going on? Why can't I afford an apartment when I've got a salaried job? This is insane. Got to get the message across. This is on purpose. You are being targeted. Small businesses are the bedrock of a healthy economy, of the middle class. The vision of the Democrats, they want you to think that they're they represent the people, and they'll stand up against these exploitative corporations. They are the corporations, people. It's not complicated. They're working for the corporations. They are in bed with the corporations. They're making policy to benefit the corporations and to destroy the small businesses, destroy the middle class, because they see the middle class as an impediment to the implementation of their plans. It's not complicated. What they want is to be the elite, a very small number of corporate masters who rule over a population of slaves. We've got to stop them. One thing we try to do here is we don't just want to tell you the problems. We want to give you solutions. And that's easier said than done in some cases. Some of these problems, there is no personal solution. There's not much I can do as an individual or you can do as an individual to stop the open border. So for those things, we have to get active, get political, get involved. Remember, that's the real reason they hate InfoWars. It's because the information, yes, that's key to what we do and we've been right about everything for 30 years, ahead of the curve. And if they'd listened to us back then, we wouldn't be having the problems that we're having now, like microplastics in the testicles of every male tested in America. We wouldn't be living through this utter horror show if people took Alex Jones's warnings seriously about atrazine and microplastics and everything else that they laughed at us about, that is now a overwhelming concern to them all of a sudden, now that it's too late to actually solve the problem, they're willing to admit it. And these are things that require both individual and collective resistance. We should be passing laws to limit the proliferation of plastics. At the same time, you have to be doing your part to protect yourself. And it's not just in the air. And this is one thing that's not talked about enough, in my opinion, is the plastic particles are in the air quite often, and they'll settle on the ground. Kids have a lot higher proliferation of plastics because they're on the ground, kids crawling around and stuff. They pick it up in the dust from the floor. So air filters can help clear your air of these toxic particles. But obviously water is a major concern, with plastics being detected in hundreds of water systems throughout the United States in really disturbing levels. So again, while simultaneously we should be working as a collective to politically prevent this from happening, we can't wait for that. You have to be protecting yourself. So get a water filter, and water filters are 10% off right now at InfoWarsStore.com, as is storable food. And again, it doesn't need to be the apocalypse for you to have storable food. Back during the big freeze of 2021 here in Texas, I was literally getting texts from friends going, "Do you know where I can get food? Do you know anywhere that has food and water? I'm hungry." Like, that was real. That really happened. If that ice storm comes through a southern state that doesn't have the infrastructure to deal with, we don't have salt trucks stored away for the once every four decades something like this happens. So for 2 weeks there, we couldn't get deliveries into stores. We were running out of food. And we dipped into some of our storable food. See, it doesn't have to be a world-rending crisis. It doesn't have to be World War III or a collapse of the electricity grid for you to need storable food. It could be as simple as a weather phenomenon, an electricity shutdown. And regardless, the food is delicious anyway, so you can eat it even if it's not an emergency. All of this is to say that the Environmental Protection Agency is warning of major cyber attacks to U.S. water systems. The national security of the United States will remain in perpetual jeopardy until the installed administration is out of office. Joe Biden is the laughingstock of the world as America's enemies are ramping up the attacks. Now the EPA has issued an enforcement alert urging water systems to take immediate action to protect the nation's drinking water from foreign cyber attacks. Cyber attacks against water utilities across the country are becoming more frequent and severe, the agency announced Monday. EPA officials warn approximately 70% of utilities inspected by federal officers over the last year violated standards designed to mitigate cyber threats. And so what a cyber threat would most likely look like, it would either be a shutdown, meaning that you would have to then rely on water you can get from other sources, which, I mean, it's insane to think about, but if you turned on your taps and nothing came out, what would you do for water? I guess I'd go to the creek in my backyard, and that water can be gross sometimes, so I better have a water filter. But more likely, instead of just being shut down completely, it would be contaminated. They would open up the sluices at the treatment center and allow infected, contaminated water into the drinking water, and spread sickness and prevent people from using water that way. So our water filters can deal with that stuff. Our water filters can filter out contaminated water. Okay, I'm not making medical claims here. You've got to do your own research. Make sure you're getting a sufficiently powerful water filter. But ours are the top of the line stuff. The Alexa Pure water filters are the best of the best. And I pray to God it's not necessary in the future. But to be honest, it's necessary now. I mean, you should be filtering your water now. So it's another one of these things where you should be filtering your water already. You should really be showering in filtered water, but that's a whole different thing. And if there is a disaster of some sort, having an ability to clean and filter water, it could be the difference between life and death. So do it for the emergency, but also just do it as an everyday thing. There's no reason not to be filtering your water. Everyone should be filtering their water, all of the water they use. InfoWarsStore.com. Keep us on the air. Protect yourself against the poison in our food and water. Now, back to politics. Back to Biden. Back to his relentless failure. We have reached a new milestone in the ability of the Biden handlers to cover up his totally collapsing mental state. And here's the headline. White House insists Biden meant recession when he said pandemic. Okay, so we've moved on from simply mispronouncing words. We've moved on from claiming that dead people are in the room with us. We are now at the point where they're taking words that Joe Biden said and saying actually he meant an entirely different word. Matt says they've been doing this for years. This is different, though. This is different. Right? Sometimes he'll say, you know, I'm better if I did it. And they're like, no, that he said American history, actually. That's what he said there. And it's like, okay, well, he's an old man with a mouth full of marbles. He just can't say the things he's thinking. That's understandable. He's a dementia-riddled skeleton. But he didn't mispronounce pandemic. He said the word pandemic. And they go, no, actually, he meant recession. A common mistake. It's a common mistake. President Joe Biden bizarrely claimed on Sunday that he was still serving as vice president during the pandemic. Though an amended transcript of his remark distributed by the White House indicates may have been a simple slip of the tongue and the president had meant to reference the Great Recession. Oh, that's what it was. No, he just said the wrong word. No, he just said an entirely different word accidentally. Because apparently that's better. I guess it is. I guess that is better. It's better that we have a president who just says entirely unrelated different words sometimes than a president who cannot remember the last few years of his life. I guess that's the decision they're having to make. They're like, all right, what actually happened is that Joe Biden can't remember entire years of his life. And he legitimately thinks he was vice president when the pandemic happened because he's a crazy old coot. So I think it'd be better if we just say, actually, he just said an entirely different word than the one he was supposed to say. That's the better option for them. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk and not enough attention has been paid to it about the fact that the intelligence community is openly stating that they are withholding information from Donald Trump that they should be providing him with. And that if he becomes president, they will continue that practice of not giving the president of the United States all of the information they have because they're usurping his power. And it's a coup. They've actually performed a coup on the executive branch. And the person there is a puppet for all intents and purposes. But they have been open about the fact that they are withholding intelligence from Donald Trump. They claim because they're worried that Trump he's not responsible enough to deal with this information. And obviously, that's just horrible and wrong. However, I would actually agree with the intelligence community withholding information from Joe Biden because you don't know if he can tell the difference between secret and not secret anymore. I don't know if he can tell the difference between reality and non-reality. He thinks he was the vice president during the pandemic. Okay? He relentlessly lies or obfuscates, and it's hard to tell the difference. Whether he's just insane or lying. But I actually do worry that they're going to give him some piece of vital intelligence and he's going to go out and just talk about it because he thinks it's on the teleprompter. We don't know. It actually is dangerous to have somebody like this in office with all the intelligence.
How you intend on getting the union vote when there is a large portion of the union workers that are gun enthusiasts and you are actively trying to diminish our Second Amendment right and take away our guns?
You're forced.
All right, thank you.
Now, shush. I support the Second Amendment. Second Amendment, just like right now, if you yell fire, that's not free speech. And from the very beginning, I have a shotgun, I have a 20 gauge, a 12 gauge, my sons hunt. Guess what? You're not allowed to own any weapon. I'm not taking your gun away at all. You need 100 rounds.
So when you were in Beto, when you said you're going to take our guns,
I did not say that.
We're going to ban assault weapons again, come hell or high water.
I'm demanding a ban on assault weapons and high capacity magazines.
Biden told 15 lies, nearly a lie a minute. From whoppers about the economy to prevarications on Israel, Biden spun a fantasy land of a presidency that voters know is false. How about number 8? Inflation was 9% when I came to office?
Nope.
That's right. and on it went. There it is right there. 9% when it came to office.
1.4% when he came into office.
Inflation has gone slightly up. It wasn't 9% when I came in.
When such a geriatric calamity is not only the president of these United States, but is running for re-election, something has gone terribly wrong. Which begs the question, why is any of this even necessary? Shortly following Biden's inauguration, the first thing that people immediately began wondering about Joe Biden was, who is really running the show and why? Of course, CIA plant and Soros minion, the arrogant Barack Obama, kept very little close to the vest when it came to his intentions following his second term.
With Joe Biden, he's living his dream. Remember what he said? He's on tape. My dream is to phone in the presidency. I would like to have a third term, but not if I had to work. I would just like to sit in my basement and just tell people what's going to do. And that, he said it, and that's what he's doing right now. The Obamas are running the country. When my point is, they want Joe Biden the way he is because he's a construct.
But the inside man acting as the ventriloquist with his arm up the dummy known as President Biden is, by all accounts, White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients.
I mean, by getting Jeff's sign off, you're getting the president's sign off.
Oh, this Jeff guy's powerful.
Yeah. Realistically, they are, people call him like the second most powerful person in Washington. Like, he runs the White House.
He runs the White House.
Like, he's responsible for everybody that works there. He like helps set the president's agenda. Like, controls what gets said, all that stuff.
Is Jeff more powerful than Harris?
In some ways, yes, in some ways, no.
And is Jeff more powerful than Kamala?
Like, not legally, but...
Who would you say is the most powerful person at the White House?
Jeff.
Jeff?
Yeah.
Jeff is the most powerful person at the White House?
Other than, like, the president.
So all buck stops, like, all roads lead to Jeff.
Jeff and the president, yeah.
Despite falling short of President Biden's goal to vaccinate 70% of adults by July 4th, this weekend the White House is celebrating progress in the fight against the pandemic. Here to discuss, White House COVID-19 response coordinator Jeff Zients.
This is the man behind the inflation, energy crisis, impending food shortages, border invasion, and New World Order policy.
We do not believe what is happening in Gaza is a genocide.
Underneath Obama, Zients served as director of the National Economic Council from 2014 to 2017 and led the effort to bring us the nightmare known as the Affordable Care Act.
Obama!
You got Obama phone?
Yes, everybody in Cleveland, low minority, got Obama phone. Keep Obama in president, you know? Gave us a phone.
He gave you a phone. How did he give you a phone?
You sign up. If you're on food stamps, you're on Social Security, you got low income, you disability.
Notably, Zients was a member of Facebook's board of directors from 2018 to 2020. As the crew behind the disaster known as the Biden administration becomes more visible to the general public, perhaps now the American people will know who to actually complain to, because Joe Biden is merely a pitiful decoy. John Bowne reporting for InfoWars.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to give out the numbers to take your phone calls this hour. We still have a lot to cover. We're going to get into Ukraine. We're going to continue talking about the Biden administration just a little bit. Not really the Biden administration, but just the economic reality of Bidenomics, as well as a number of other topics still to come on today's program, but we will take your calls throughout this hour. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call now on American Journal. And we'll be going to newer callers first. So if you've never called in or have called in and left on hold and haven't been able to get on air, go ahead and give us a call and we'll go to you first. If you are a regular caller, hold off for a little bit so we can get some of these new voices in the conversation. Now, we sort of moved away from this topic, but let's return to this story from InfoWars to again illustrate the dire circumstances of not just small businesses in America, but any building block you want to point to in America is under attack right now. Small businesses, a building block of the economy that's being gutted, families, building block of the economy, building block of the nation, rather, that are being destroyed. And the point is that all of it is on purpose. So almost 50% of small businesses say they're not going to survive a second Biden term. And of course, we covered last week from Bloomberg, U.S. small businesses' rent delinquencies rise to a three-year high. So there's been a spike in small businesses unable to make even their most basic payments on things like rent. All this is on purposes. All this is by design. I noticed in the video that we just played, John Bounds talking about Jeff Zient, or whatever that guy's name is. You know, the second most powerful man in Washington, the man who controls the Biden White House, you know, the man who didn't run and didn't get voted for and is not going to be held to account. He's the one that's actually in charge because we have a shadow government. And I can't help but notice that in that video, they talk about how he's in charge of the small business groups and the Bidenomic plans. And you've got these people that nobody voted for, that don't have to justify their decisions, that are never held to account and remain in office regardless of who we elect, who are overseeing the deconstruction of small businesses in America, whose policies are destroying the business of the ability of small business owners to maintain operations. Or maybe the reality is that this is just another thing we can add to the list of things that make you fascist. We know working out can make you fascist. We know reading Lord of the Rings or 1984 is a precursor to fascism. Maybe there's something about starting a small business that makes people fascist. Maybe as soon as you open up your shoe shop, you're just possessed with the spirit of Adolf Hitler. You're a normal, hardworking American, but the instant you file that LCC, you are overcome with a sense of racial superiority and a desire to see minorities suffer. Maybe that's what's happening. Maybe small businesses make you fascist. I wouldn't even put it past them to make that argument. In a way, they kind of do. I mean, the idea of self-sufficiency, of starting your own business, entrepreneurship. I mean, these things are integral to the Western civilization that they so fervently against. Or maybe it's just when you actually do things, you realize how messed up the systems are. Maybe when you actually try to start a business and pay people and create something, you realize how many barriers there are to success in this country. How exploitative the tax regimes can be, how crushing the regulations. Maybe believing the illusion of big government is only possible when you have no skin in the game, when you are a dependent, worthless, helpless cog in a machine. Maybe you're in that situation, you could be blind to the realities of the pressures that people who actually do things have to deal with. But all this is to say that according to the people doing this, it's on purpose. You don't have to listen to me. Correction. You do have to listen. Actually, you do have to listen. Actually, I demand that you listen to me right now because there is a delusion in the American people. There is a baseless imagining they have an imaginative construct they have fallen prey to that says that the people who run our government are just like them. They're just people with families who are just doing their best. They're patriots that are trying their hardest to make things right and to find justice. This is nonsense. I don't know what gave you that idea. I don't know how you came to that conclusion. But look around, damn it. Everything's bad on purpose. Everything they do has the opposite outcome of what they say it's going to be, and they do it anyway. They're doing it on purpose. Don't take my word for it. Take theirs. Let's go now to this clip of Klaus Schwab on stage with Joe Biden saying in no uncertain terms that the middle class itself is an impediment to their plans and therefore must be eliminated. Let's watch.
To our discussion, which we had at dinner two days ago, the fourth industrial revolution has one big challenge. It is the holding out of the middle class.
The holding out of the middle class. So if this fourth industrial revolution is necessary to save humanity, if it's all about climate change and crisis upon crisis, our angrier worlds must be more interconnected. I mean, if those are the stakes, I guess the middle class has to be destroyed. I guess it has to be eliminated. I mean, if it's the main barrier to saving the world, obviously it must be destroyed. And we know the fourth industrial revolution, the great reset, whatever you want to call it, it's the same outcome. It is the great consolidation, it is the combining of corporate and governmental power, and is the elimination of private property. I've said before, I think maybe our founding fathers made a mistake when they replaced property with pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and property are the key components of freedom. And liberty. If I own something, if it's mine, if I have land and I have a car that I can get around with, nobody can stop me. If I have land where I can grow food, nobody can starve me. If I own things, I'm a real person. Slaves don't own anything. Free people own things. They don't want you to own anything. And I mean that. They don't want you to own anything. I know that sounds a little bit crazy. You can own clothes for a while. Maybe you can own, I don't know, little trinkets. You can own disposable things. You can buy toilet paper and food and, you know, things that go away. But you will own nothing of permanence. And anything bigger than a T-shirt, it's going to have to be on credit. It's going to have to be on debit. It's going to have to, you're going to have to get approval from the bank to make sure your credit score is high enough to even rent something. So cars, phones, houses, the economic structures that have been built around ownership are being subverted, being destroyed, being taken over, being taken advantage of to eliminate ownership itself. And the devious part of this, what they're doing now, is trying to convince you that this is what you want. That they're just doing this because it's what the market demands. Don't listen to me, listen to them. Welcome to 2030. I own nothing, have no privacy, and life has never been better. Remember, that is for the middle class alone. The lower classes, the poverty stricken, they'll own nothing because they have no money, because they're going to be in the paradigm of the company store. They're going to continuously be working to pay off a debt that they never actually succeed in fully paying off, so that their children are born without inheritance as a blank slate individual, completely separate from their history and even to the first generation. And they want to convince you that that's your idea. That's because this is what you want. So let's go now to clip number four. We've got a person arguing in favor of the trend that we've seen that has destroyed the housing market, that has made it impossible for young people to ever own a home, let alone get a starter home right out of college, build equity, use it as an investment. That's going away. You'll pay the same amount as you were, just instead of a mortgage going towards paying off the house that is yours, you'll be paying the same amount to rent it from a giant corporation who actually owns it, can kick you out at any time, can give the police warrants to go in and search, give them permission to go in and search without warrants. It's a multifaceted, multivaried benefits that they get from this. The destruction of ownership. At the end of the day, it's a psychological attack, degrading you to the state of property. So the poor will have nothing. The rich, however, not only will they own everything, but think about the other aspect of that privacy. They have absolute privacy. Let's go now to clip four here about corporations buying more American homes.
Your revenue went up last year by 67%. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're expanding. I mean, when you think about it, we have an incredible amount of demand for what we do. So, Leslie, in any given week, we might have 200 or 300 homes available.
For renting?
For renting. And we get about 10,000 leasing inquiries a week.
Tricon is trying to buy 800 houses a month.
I think if you asked a lot of millennials, and that tends to be our primary resident, they would probably tell you that they don't necessarily desire to own a home or to own a car. And they've grown up in the sharing economy, and for what's important to them is lifestyle, right? And so if they can move into this, what we call a turnkey or hotel-ready home, and have a low-maintenance lifestyle, that's very compelling for them. Very compelling.
Yeah, they don't want to own anything. They don't want to be free. They don't want to have responsibility, and they don't want to build something. They don't want to leave anything to their kids. They want to have a life that's impermanent. So what he's saying there is, if you can just give people comfort, if you can just give them, you know, ease of access, if you can just remove responsibility, then you can essentially enslave people. Maybe that's the lesson that they've learned. Would-be homebuyers may be forced to rent the American dream rather than buy it. So you can never rent the American dream, right? You can never actually achieve the American dream while you're living in a home by somebody else's permission. There's a total reorganization and reimagining of life itself in our civilization. The whole idea of America, starting businesses, having a family, having a home, passing it on, building wealth over generation, rising up from poverty to make something of yourself, moving upward through society based on hard work and delaying your gratification, making correct decisions. All of these things are going away. Because for them to exploit you, for them to control you, for them to maximize the exploitation of you, everything needs to be impermanent. Everything needs to be transitory. You'll own nothing. You'll have no privacy. When you die, you'll leave nothing behind. And when you're born, you'll be brought down to the lowest common denominator, because that, according to them, is social justice. 8,000, they're buying 8,000 homes a month. Entire neighborhoods. They said 8,000. That's something crazy. Crew was just saying 800. I heard 8,000 there. Maybe I heard that wrong. But that's one company. And that's the houses they're buying. That's houses they're taking off the market by being able to offer significantly over asking price and shut out the, newlyweds. They own more than 80,000 rental homes. American Homes for Rent, close to 60,000. You got Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Blackstone, you know, the good guys that love you and want what's best for you. All right, let's go out to your calls now. We've got Laser Llama. Talk about Israel influence on national security. Actually, this is one of the stories I was going to cover. One person I've seen report this is Nick Fuentes on X. Nicholas J. Fuentes notes this. Republicans in Congress have introduced a bill that would give Americans serving in the Israeli military the same benefits as Americans serving in the U.S. military. Wrap your mind around that one, folks. How much more obvious can they make it that our government has been totally infiltrated and bought by Israel? So the service of a citizen of the United States in the Israeli Defense Forces shall be treated in the same manner as services in the uniformed services. So if you're an American citizen, but you go to another country to fight for another homeland, the American government will treat you as if you're a soldier in the American Army. Total traitorous activity. Laser Llama, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. I had a question for you, and it's actually like a very important question because, you know, one of government's main duties is protection of its people, and I'm concerned and wanted to hear your opinion since you're an ace in the topic, whether or not the involvement with Israel's military and now this war in Iran is effectively a threat to our national security here in the U.S. because it could cause radical Islamic terrorism, nuclear war with Russia, with the war with Ukraine. And also, I think it's concerning for the generals and the people involved in the stock market with the military-industrial complex because, you know, as seen in history, they're never able to keep the money. They always come for them, too, along with their money and their family, you know, as seen in the Balkans and other times in history with communist overthrows. What do you think?
I think you're exactly right. I you're overwhelmingly right, Laser Llama. There is nothing.
Did I laser your brain?
Well, it's just I'm trying to even conceive of how to make the argument. You know, it's like, do you think setting a bomb off will be damaging to the house? It's like, yes. Yeah. So there's nothing that we've done in the Middle East for my entire life that's made us any safer. Everything we've done has made us less safe. We've, on behalf of Israel, started wars that created migrant crises that have destroyed safety in Europe and here in America. What's happening in Palestine right now could not happen without American support. And so when people around the world see the horrifying images day after day of the most brutal, inhuman massacres the world has ever seen, of course they're going to blame us. We are to blame. America is to blame. Israel's to blame. They wouldn't be able to do it without America. What could even be the other argument? How could this possibly be making us safer? Especially since the ultimate plan is to put all the Palestinians on boats and ship them over here. I mean, it is so absurd to claim that this is in our national security interest. Everything we're doing with in cooperation with Israel, everything we do directly puts our national security at risk. By aligning us with genocidal war criminals, obviously, but also by opening up our borders and allowing unknown numbers of foreign operatives into our country. So, yeah, I think the greatest threat to American national security is and has been for a very long time our alliance with Israel. That's my take. And look, it's not just a threat to our national security. It's a threat to our rights as well. As we've seen, the way that they are using the war in Gaza as an excuse to crack down on anti-Semitism in this country, which just means criticizing Israel, meaning that our First Amendment, our foundational principle of free speech, free thought, free opinion, separation of church and state, is being eviscerated on behalf of Israel. So it's not just our national security that's at risk. It's our national identity. It's our constitution. The intelligence community is spying on student protesters. This story from KenKlippenstein.com, his Substack, I believe. Congress is pressuring the FBI to infiltrate college protests with informants. The National Counterterrorism Center, created in the wake of 9/11 to combat Al-Qaeda, is now working overtime to find evidence of foreign funding of pro-Palestinian student protests, I've learned. The effort follows repeated calls by Congress for the federal government to investigate university protesters' purported links to Hamas and coincides with the push by the FBI and Homeland Security bureaucracies to link the campus demonstrations to foreign actors. Tempting as it might be to laugh off the specter of foreign powers directing undergraduate protesters, evidence of this would provide the legal basis for the intelligence community to spy on Americans. Absent a foreign connection, the protester constitutionally protected speech. So the international conflagration that Israel has us embroiled in is a threat not just to our national security in a variety of different ways. It's a threat to the men who we have in the Middle East right now, who are still, for the last 7 months, have been coming under attack by militias everywhere from Iraq to Yemen, but also to us here in the homeland with an open border where terrorists could easily cross, unknown, undetected. Or we can just bring in millions upon millions of Palestinians, and the whole situation in Israel can just be ported over here, and we can exist in a state of continuous warfare. And then they'll use the conflict they created as an excuse to destroy the First Amendment and to sick the intelligence agencies on American protesters expressing their First Amendment rights. What's the benefit at all? There isn't one. Folks, we'll go back out to your calls here. We have some breaking news. World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab steps back from executive post. World Economic Forum founder and executive chairman Klaus Schwab will be stepping back from his role running the global gathering he founded in 1971 on behalf of Henry Kissinger and the Rockefellers, I remind you. He will be stepping down as executive chairman and transitioning to a role as a non-executive chairman, he said, adding that the change in role is pending approval by the Swiss government. In a statement, a spokesperson for the forum said the organization is, quote, transforming from a convening platform to the leading global institution for public-private cooperation. Yes, folks, they're transforming from a unofficial to an official world government. They're making the transition. The metamorphosis has commenced. The forum's governance structure is set to change as a result of that evolution, the spokesperson said, and Schwab will transition from the executive chairman to chairman of the board of trustees by January 2025. Schwab has not named his successor, but said that over last year, the group's executive board, under the leadership of President Börje Brind, has taken full executive responsibility. Brind is a former Norwegian conservative leader. We'll talk about him in just a second. Klaus, 86, is synonymous with the organization he's managed for more than 50 years. Initially known as the European Management Forum, early iterations of the event drew far fewer attendees to Davos than the thousands that now ascend the Swiss mountain town. Now the annual WEF meeting in Davos attracts dozens of high-ranking world leaders, blah, blah, blah. The forum operates much like a family business, with Schwab's children appointed to high-ranking positions and his wife, Hildy, heading the organization's foundation and award ceremony in Davos. Isn't that nice? It's like an unofficial royalty. It's like self-appointed nobility in a neo-feudal system. Isn't that pleasant? Isn't that nice to know that this family who made their riches on slave labor in Nazi Germany has appointed themselves as not heretical. That's where I'm looking for. Well, they are heretical. They are that too. But it's nice. It'll be passed. It's passed from father to daughter, father to son. Like a monarchy, yeah. Heritable. That's right. Yeah, he's no longer executive chairman. He is now taking on his role as emperor of existence. He'll be morphing with the AI super intelligence, and he'll rule forever, he and his children, from hell. So there you go. King of the demons. So who's Borgi Brind? Now, I was thinking that they would go with somebody like Mark Benioff, owner of Salesforce and Time Magazine, since he's very high up in the system there. But in a way, it's nice to know that the person leading the World Economic Forum next will continue to be a literal Bond villain, to have the creepy accent and everything. Borgi Brind. So he is basically a climate extremist. That's why he's being chosen for a couple reasons. One, because he was the chairman of the United Nations Commission on Sustainable Development from 2003 to 2004. So he was early on in the United Nations efforts to destroy Western industry through falsified interpretations of climate change information. And he has basically made an entire career being the middleman between corporations and governments. That's what he does. And so as they move into a fully fledged fascistic, neo-feudal, technocratic global government that is beyond just suggesting things to people and actually engaged in the creation of and enforcement of laws for which you will have no say, oversight, or process to resist, they need somebody who can facilitate this. So he's been the chairman of Mesta, Norway's largest contracting group in the area of road and highway maintenance. He was the international vice chairman of the China Council for International Cooperation on Environment and Development. He was the deputy leader of the Conservative Party in Norway from 94 to 98. As foreign minister of Norway, Brindy normalized relationship with China. Together with the foreign minister of Cuba, he was the guarantor of the Colombian peace process. As Norwegian minister of trade and industry, Brind developed the framework conditions for trade and industry and for innovation and development. So he's got all of the prerequisites necessary to forming a global government.
Don't worry, Mr. Bond. We're bringing in all of the leaders of China and Europe together. And under the rule of our beneficent government, we'll owe nothing, we'll have no privacy, resistance is futile, our cooperation is unquestionable.
Incredible. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice to see that that Spectre is getting a new evil leader? Of course, he is a member of the Bilderberg Group, World Economic Forum. He's also apparently a member of the Order of the Phoenix, which is pretty cool. That's pretty neat. He knows Harry Potter. Isn't that cool? All right. Hey, at least he has kids. He's not a total genetic dead end like most of the leaders in Europe. So there you go. Apparently, Klaus Schwab is stepping down, and as the World Economic Forum transforms from a convening platform where they just talk about stuff to a leading global institution for public-private cooperation. It's nice to see. It's nice to see. I'll have fresh blood in the unelected global government. Out to your calls now. Johnny Freight Train in Florida wants to talk about Red Lobster shutting down, another warning sign about the U.S. economy. Red Lobster is declaring bankruptcy. Why do you think that is, Johnny?
Well, they say that it's because of a shrimp special they put on, and people herding in there to get all the $20 special is what caused them to shut down. But they need to put the blame on the top where it belongs, the socialist, globalist, democratic regime that we got in place in this country. with the policies that they have. Red Lobster should have never shut down. It's uncalled for. That's just one sign of what they're doing, and people need to wake up. Wake up, America.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a troubling signal of the economic earthquake that we're about to go through when you've got this, for all intents and purposes, very successful, long-lasting, massive restaurant chain just going away, shutting down.
It's the most ridiculous communistic system I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yep. God be with us is all I got to say, Harrison. God be with us.
Amen, Johnny. And, you know, the shrimp debacle was definitely a big one, but not enough to end a company. Basically what happens is they had an endless shrimp deal, sort of on the assumption that people would come in, they might get the endless shrimp, but they'd also get appetizers, they'd get drinks, they'd tip well. They would actually, you know, it's called a loss leader, right? You might lose some money on the shrimp, but you make more money on the other stuff. So that was the idea, but it turns out that that's not really the world we live in anymore. It's all about just getting everything you can for as little as possible now. So you go, you get the endless shrimp, you order nothing else, you eat as much as humanly possible because you gotta get whatever edge you can. We're in a dog eat dog world now, and if some company is stupid enough to offer you a really good deal, you better take advantage of that. Put them out of business. I'm telling you, I would love to see a James Bond movie where he realizes he's working for the bad guys. I would love to see a British agent being like, wait, who's giving the orders? House what? I got a breaking headline that I feel like I have to bring to you. Talk a little bit about Ukraine now to your calls. From Redux, pro-pedophile activist group celebrates as Germany decriminalizes child porn possession. You did it. We did it. We're there. We have filled all of the most outlandish claims of the evangelical conservatives in the 90s. It's happening. Decriminalization of child porn. Because apparently children being victimized by pornographers is less offensive to these people than the fact that someone's horrific fetish might not be fulfilled. That's the important thing here. As we know, you know, NATO has said themselves, the point of them existing is to spread sexual degeneracy around the world. So this is our democracy, folks. Germany's parliament has received the votes necessary to remove a section of the criminal code which made possession of child sexual abuse material a felony crime. The bill passed last Thursday comes into effect. Minimum sentences for the possession of child pornography will be reduced and the offense will be downgraded to a misdemeanor. Progress, folks. That's called progress. Congratulations, Germany. You have now exceeded the Weimar Republic. You've now gone further than Weimar. Incredible. Now, on the topic of our democracy, Zelensky's term in office has officially ended as of last night. He has now extended his term by martial law, as Elon Musk points out, but I thought they were there to uphold democracy. Well, this is what democracy means now. This is what it means now. It means that a warmongering little goblin can declare himself dictator for life, kill entire generations of his population, do it with foreign money, foreign drugs, be celebrated like the second coming of Christ and Winston Churchill all wrapped up into one. That's our democracy. And if you disagree, it's because you're a Russian sympathizer, terrorist, Nazi, fascist. And your freedom of speech has been revoked. Meanwhile, Ukraine presses Biden to lift ban on using U.S. weapons to strike Russia. Basically, they're very desperate to be able to use some of the long-range weapons we've given them to attack targets inside Russia, which, if you watched the Alex Jones show yesterday, he showed videos of angel of death, Victoria Nuland, talking about how, yes, this would be a major escalation. It would cause Russia to retaliate in a very dangerous way. And that's the point. And so they're for it. War and popularity keep Zelensky in power despite term expiring. Yeah. War and popularity? No, war. No, the war. No, the war. You know, he was less popular before, but then he just killed all those people. He just sent all those people to the front line. Now he's hugely popular with people that survived, I guess. So they're desperate to expand the war. They're desperate to continue it. And they're doing it in the name of a democracy that they are actively destroying. So there's that. So there's that. I mean, it's just, you know, said a million times, but you look in the past, you think people on the run up to World War II or World War I, you think, how could they have let this get out so out of hand? How could they not have seen what was coming? How could they have not have done whatever was necessary to stop the spiraling out of control of this war, leading to the deaths of millions of people? And now we know. We're sitting here watching it happen. We're watching it happen. The point is, the people in charge want the war, so they'll make it happen. Unless we stand up and resist and oppose it with everything we've got. With that, we got to your calls. Larry in Florida wants to share some info on laws and codes. Go ahead, Larry, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much, Harrison, and good morning to you.
Good morning.
I wanted to share a couple things, but could not resist a quick comment on your earlier conversation on the housing. And, you know, as you know, we're in the red state of Florida, in the very red county of Manatee, which is on the west coast of Florida. And a lot of farmland and a lot of open space being developed right now. And they're actually approving and putting in subdivisions that are, I mean, I'm talking hundreds of homes that are all rental.
Yep.
All rental.
Designed to always be rental, yeah.
They're not rental for middle income or lower middle income. They're market rentals. Mm-hmm. And sadly, I hope people appreciate a lot of their pensions are what's allowing these big companies like BlackRock and Vanguard to do this housing. The commercial real estate market is in trouble because of their COVID plan. So they've moved to residential and they make a lot of money and they get to go ahead and move forward on the 2030 agenda. So that's just a sidebar.
Yep.
But wanted to mention 18611, federal criminal code dealing with voting rights of aliens. And that's what they call illegal immigrants in the federal criminal code. And a good summary, by the way, for the crew or anybody look up, Cornell University puts up a quick summary. But basically, the illegal aliens, criminal aliens, do not get allowed to participate in federal elections unless, and there's a couple of exceptions about local and state elections that are dangerously murky given what we went through in 2020. But the real insane exception, and it's the very last exception in this little criminal code piece that's federal law, and it says that's illegal unless at the time the alien was voting, the alien thought that they were an American citizen. Now, you know, I'm pretty old and pretty decrepit, but my thought process says, I wonder if the NGOs and folks are helping those people understand that if they go to vote, they must have thought they were citizens because we're giving them phones and credit cards and everything else and Medicare and Medicaid.
100%. It's almost a self-fulfilling thing where they go, well, they let me vote, so I must be a citizen.
Yep.
It's like if you can vote, then you can say you reasonably believed you're a citizen. So bring that up again, crew, if you would, please, because we've got the actual text here, and I'll read it verbatim.
Yeah, go down.
This is crazy.
Yeah,
all right. So section.
And Tucker ran with this last week, by the way.
18 U.S. Code 611. Here, let me read it out for you here, Larry, if we can scroll down to the very bottom. The last subsection says that it does not apply to the alien if the alien reasonably believed at the time of voting in violation of such subsection that he or she was a citizen of the United States. If they reasonably believe, well, it's frankly not reasonable for any of them to believe that there's, that is crazy. I had not heard of that. Tucker Carlson, I didn't see Tucker Carlson cover this, but you're saying he brought this up?
He actually had the lady that, and I forget her name, that's been running the True the Vote program for about 4 years, and she stumbled into it, and she's run it by a bunch of attorneys and folks, and they've said, this is a problem. We're not sure how that will go, and the problem is if enough folks believe they were citizens and they go ahead and vote, we already saw what happened last time. Once the votes are in, you don't get them to be reexamined and recounted or looked at. At least, conservative Republicans don't. So that's just one quick item for y'all to look at. That's maybe a much larger topic. And then the second thing, just to share with you, the wonderful foreign aid, military aid legislation piece that passed the $91 billion had a little section in it, which was the side name of it was the TikTok. And it was aimed at basically forcing TikTok to be able to be sold if the president, in the president's sole discretion, thought that it was a danger. Okay, to our national security, whatever that is, like an open border might be. And the problem is, and your folks probably want to go look at that one, but basically it's not just TikTok. It's pretty much any software-driven and software type of company that's like TikTok that can be an internet company.
Right. And we've pointed out how they're using, international influence as an excuse because the enemy nations are affecting our, we've got AIPAC, the biggest PAC, yeah, while they're writing laws saying that. Yeah. So we're not at war with Russia. We're not at war with Russia. We're not at war with Iran, but they use these enemy states as an excuse to say, basically, if you're against the war in Ukraine, you must be a Russian agent. Therefore, being against Ukraine puts you under the purview of these laws, policies, and rules. It is very obvious what they're doing. We are losing our rights because of the wars that these people are starting. They're starting the wars so they can have an excuse to steal our rights. Stay tuned, folks. Alex Jones in 90 seconds.